accession number 25452, Reel 7.
Major Littleton, Reel 7. You were saying Vesuvius erupted and you got involved in all sorts of consequent activities.
Well, the army itself did. The troops got involved because there was details I don't know. I was just doing my routine jobs. But there was a lot of help had to be given to the civil population on the mountain and in that area at the time, because it really was one of the major explosions. It was big stuff. And even Caserta Palace, which was considerably north of Naples, you could see the glow in the sky even from Caserta Palace. It must have been 20 miles north of Naples. So it was really quite an incident. And then things came back to normal quick enough. But one had time on one's hands. I remember particularly going to find a nephew of mine.
Where was he?
He was the son of my sister by her first marriage to a man called Joe Berger. The marriage broke up and he went with Joe Berger to America. And so in the end he found himself as a young man recruited into the American army. I haven't seen him since he was a little kid 3 foot high. And but because I knew from family that where he was and what his unit was. He was a medic in the medical corps. And of course, being with Fifth Army, I had access to their order of battle. So I could pinpoint his unit.
Looked him up.
So I took a staff car one day, and I went up the mountains, and duly met him.
I went
to this unit, and I said, "Do you have a Private Berger here?" And I was properly dressed. I was a British major, so they took a bit of notice. And they said, "Oh, Private Berger. Oh, he's in the chow line over there." And so he didn't know he didn't know me really from Adam. He knew who I was. Never seen me. So it was great.
Had he any idea you were in the same theatre as him?
I don't know. I can't remember that. Mm. But it was great. And we had a fascinating time. And I met him again when I was in Rome, and his unit was passing through and was held up nearby. And so I met him then the second time. Ultimately, he came back to England and spent the rest of his life here. But it was an interesting experience, just off the normal beaten track.
Did you ever run across any of the more senior officers at Caserta, like Field Marshal Alexander or...
No.
Mark Clark or anyone of that sort?
No, I never met Mark Clark. I did have cause on at least two occasions, if not three, while I was there, to go out to the bridgehead, Anzio Bridgehead, because that was static, as you know. It is said that the Americans failed to take advantage of it at the time, and they should have been able to push on when they didn't, and they allowed the Germans to hold it, and then it became static. And of course, it was always under fire. They lived underground, they well dug in. It was really sort of First World trench warfare, that sort of atmosphere when you got there. You were down in fairly deep trenches with covers over the top, making offices and so on. I had to go on two or three occasions, I don't know why, for administrative reasons, because there were a lot of there was a whole British division there, if I remember rightly, I forget which one. There was either one or two British divisions. Hell of a lot of troops there.
56th Division was certainly there, the London division.
Would they? Very possibly, yes. So there were a lot of troops, and I had opposite number there, DAAGs, who I had to deal with on this, that, and the other. So I had to make these journeys, which were done by boat, of course, and I was not a good sailor.
Did you have to land over the beach, presumably?
Yes, to some extent. I don't know what they'd... Probably had pontoons, I think, sticking out or something. Something like that, but I suppose... I don't seem to remember climbing out into water. It was better organised than that. But of course, anything that was built there above ground was subject to being shelled, because the Germans had more than enough guns to keep everybody on their toes all the time. But it was an interesting visit, I know. I've no doubt they were necessary.
When you were saying that when Vesuvius went up, there had to be help to the civilian population. Here in Caserta, you're in the middle of a highly populated area. Did you have anything much to do with the Italian civilian population?
In Caserta. No, we definitely, in fact, it was only a small village outside Caserta Palace, and I don't think I ever moved outside it except to go specifically to somewhere. Mm. So I had, again, no contact with the civilian population at all.
Now, also, you entered Rome with the American Fifth Army. Do you think you were the only British soldier to get into Rome at that time?
Well, there was my... I was part of a headquarters, as I say. There was a brigadier in charge of it. Of British. But I remember going in fairly early on, because as soon as the battle was finally decided, the Anzio Bridge had broke out when the American Fifth Army at last pushed overland north of their position. And then Rome was decided, the Germans fortunately decided to make it an open city and buggered off right smartly the other side, as you will know from ordinary history books.
What impression did you get when you entered Rome?
Oh, a welcome impression, yes. Mm-hmm. We were welcomed at that stage. We were welcomed.
Treated as liberators, as opposed to
In the main, yes, in the main. I think they'd had enough of war, the Italians. They were only pleased that the war was passing Rome by. Mm. But, of course, they were short of everything. They hadn't access to countryside, to normal supply routes, marketing, and so on. So we became very quickly responsible for organising food and that sort of thing.
Did you get involved in doing that yourself?
Well, I left Fifth Army at that point and became part of became Rome Allied Area Command.
Now, what was Rome Allied Area Command?
Now, that was something quite original because it was a completely integrated Anglo-American headquarters. True, with Fifth Army, I was part of odd British troops that came under command. But remember, Eighth Army were busy fighting their battle on the other side. Rome was a huge capital city. It had to be occupied by an Anglo-American setup, and this was created. It was created based on American staff systems, G1234, with the British personnel just being part of that, but being integrated into the way they worked, whatever that was.
So you
have to learn that. And remember, it became a civilian, not a military problem then.
Yes. How did the American staff method differ from the British then, where you did things? Were the procedures significantly different?
In my own department, I think very similar.
Very similar.
Very similar. I still had administrative functions, though they were less with troops than with the problems of the civilians themselves. Somebody had to be in charge of dealing with properties and so on. Somebody else had to be dealing with food and supplies. Very shortly, the British Embassy decided to reopen in Rome, but they had to jolly well come to me or some part of our command to get their rations.
Ah. You know? So you were the food man, were you?
Well, me or some of my staff. Yeah. Again, I still retain the same basic rank and title, but my job became part of civil administration,
Were you part of the Allied military government occupied territories? Was that?
No,
it
was still
an area command.
It was just an organism all by itself. Mm. We had central offices.
Yes.
I think in the wherever, somewhere well downtown. Mm. I think offices that were probably part of, I think they're part of Mussolini's own headquarter offices. We had a hotel we took over. We had several hotels, but the headquarters in the end took over one particular hotel called the Excelsior, the bottom of the Via Veneto. It was a big hotel, and we all had, I had to organise a lot of the, you know, who would have where and what and that sort of thing. And it always amuses me because I had a very nice suite there, needless to say. But some years ago, when I first next went to Rome on holiday and looked at the Excelsior, I daren't even cross the threshold, it was so expensive. And I thought, well, once I owned this bloody place. But that sort of work was the sort of work we did.
So this is really administration again, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, general
administration. Instead of personnel, you're dealing with food and with accommodation.
Yes, a lot of things like that. And personnel, we also had to, for instance, a lot of British troops came through Rome because it was the quickest way through. And so they had to be organised, transport, overnight, kit, stay and so on, and that sort of thing. So we had a lot of contact still with British troops because they had to move through and we looked after them. It was our baby.
What sort of staff did you have working for you?
I suppose we had in the office, in the DA, in the personnel side, I would have had... as a DAG, I would have had a couple of staff captains and a couple, two or three NCOs probably, and my opposite number, whoever he might have been, would have a similar sort of staff. A driver, we had our own personal transport, so I had a driver and a car, or a military, you know, car.
Not Fiat.
No. And we had an interview, we had a private audience with the Pope.
How did that happen?
Well, it happened because the Pope wanted his rations as well. and I distinctly remember this was a great occasion. It was the officers of Rome Allied Area Command, that's what I'm talking about, of which God knows how many there were, quite a lot, because it was a big setup. With a, I don't know who was in charge of it, he'd be Major General anyhow, American. And the we were invited to a private audience, private in the sense of all of us, as distinct from, you know, the big public appearances and so on, which was held in the Sistine Chapel, of all places. And that was the most wonderful, fascinating experience.
How what happened when you got into the Sistine Chapel on that occasion?
Well,
the audience carried out?
The detail has gone hazy in my mind. I remember the incident, rather than the detail. I know he came in, and I know he spoke to us, and I've no doubt one of our senior officers did something or replied to something. And I think that was that. You don't have long chats with popes. But there we were, as a fairly exclusive body, being granted a, relatively speaking, private audience, which was quite something.
Who were you reporting to then at this stage? Was your next senior officer an American or British?
A British. We stayed within
the same
organization. Although we were in the same offices and doing the same work, if I had to report any problems up, they would go to my brigadier.
And if you were helping to relieve...
I've forgotten his name, but he was a very good man.
You were helping to relieve shortages of food for the civilians in Rome. Did this mean you were dealing with the civil officials who were running the city?
Somebody was, yes. There was a large, obviously...
Were you dealing direct with the from the Rome city government, or was that done by somebody else?
I just can't remember. I'm sorry. Mm. I should be able to, but I can't. Mm. I know it all ticked, and it was the fundamental thing was that it was a combined headquarters.
Yes.
That, you know, it is so unusual to get two staffs of an army working literally, completely integrated.
Merged.
And it worked.
And food, you're mentioning bringing food. Do you remember where you were getting the food from? Was it coming through the normal army sources?
Yes, it was coming through. It was army-type rations.
Yeah.
Army-type rations.
So
we didn't have the... I mean, we, for instance, in the Excelsior Hotel... We ate American rations for everybody in much the same situation.
What did you make of those compared to the British?
They were all right. Better, if anything.
Better.
But not major. I have no particular remembrance of them. They were American style cooking, but it was good food and it was adequate. It was quite an interesting time, I must say. But I got a bit fed up with it in the end. It didn't give me much scope.
Then you moved up to Florence.
Again, I rejoined the army side of Fifth Army. I still remained in exactly the same job. But I have a sort of recollection that I got a little bored with Rome, although I loved it as a city and I've loved it ever since. But I felt I would like to move up back into more of the military side, and so I got posted into Fifth Army, because even when we were up in the Florence area, North Italy, there was still movement of troops on both sides.
What conditions like in Florence when you got there? Not
bad. We were housed in an old tobacco factory, I think, somewhere just down the outskirts of Florence. And we had decent condition. Florence itself was untouched as a city. It was quiet, it was very much closed down. There was no museums, no galleries or anything open.
You couldn't get into the Uffizi.
No, you couldn't get into the Uffizi or the Pitti. And where they'd put the David, I'm not quite sure. But they had some hotels open for... Mr. Scrag got food and things like that. It was the tail end of the war by then. And I remember the only time I ever think of dropping names was three of us used to go to one of these hotels for an evening of drinking, and they had a small band, orchestra band, right, maybe an 8 or 10 piece orchestra band. And I always remember when I hear Rossini's Thieving Magpie, La Gazzaladra. I always remember sitting down there of an evening, putting the world to rights after the war. So I had two companions. One was a man called Elwin Jones, who became Lord Chancellor under Harold Wilson's government. And the other was a man called Alan Daughtry, who became what is now called Chief Executive, used to be called Town Clerk, but of Westminster. So he became Sir Alan Daughtry. And, of course, Elwin Jones became Lord Elwin Jones. And Elwin Jones served on the Nuremberg trials as a prosecutor. He was a very able, but both charming people.
What was he doing?
And we used to... He was on the...
Florence.
Oh, he was on the British Army side, on the legal side.
I was asking about what Elwin Jones was doing.
Oh, Elwin Jones was...
Army staff.
Yes, well, is that where we got to?
Or,
yes, he was with the, what do you call it, the legal department. What's it called?
Was he a judge?
JAG department, that's right. And he was at that time, he was a major then, I don't think he was half colonel. But he was working under the bloke who ultimately became chief prosecutor at
Nuremberg.
I think that's where they had a close association at that time. I've forgotten his name now, but he was a Lord somebody. But he's a charming man, was Jones. And we had great times together, because he was very left-wing. I was still left-wing. Alan Daughtry wasn't. And between the three of us, we put the world to rights night after night, with the help of some very nice vino.
And what about the man Daughtry? What was he doing in the army? Was he a staff officer or something?
Yes, he was a position, I think, similar to mine. I'm not quite sure what he was, whether it was QM's department or transport department or something. But I'd known him since I first joined the American Fifth Army. And he'd not been in the desert, but he'd come up on the North African side with...
First Army.
Mm.
Yes.
And so I knew him from that.
Mm. And you're saying the war's winding down, but you've still got, at this stage, I think, the Gothic line was up north of Florence, wasn't it?
Was it north of Florence? Yes, I think it probably would be. I don't seem to I have no recall much of military affairs or battles after I moved to Florence. They took place, yes. I'd been out then, of course. I was more interested in trying to get leave. Quite frankly, I was there 4 years. 4.5 years when I first came home. And so I remember I enjoyed Florence. It was an easy life. There was, I say, there's a bit of social affairs and one thing and another. The only unpleasant thing I remember is I had to organise a firing squad for somebody.
Well, what had he done?
Murdered somebody. Oh. Soldier. Mm. You know. And those days they shot them. Mm. Perhaps cheaper than sending them back to England to be hanged. Fortunately, I was not involved in the execution.
You didn't have to attend.
But I remember I had to organise it and find some troops somewhere to do it. But that's that sort of recollection that I am left with when my trip in Florence.
Do you remember where you found these soldiers from firing squad?
No, but there were troops around wherever you are in the
garrison troops.
There's always somebody around who's got some soldiers that can be raked in for whatever job is necessary.
Yeah.
The whole thing about army organisation, like, there's always somebody handy, or you can get at somebody who can do the job you want doing. At least I never failed to find somebody in the end for whatever sort of job it was.
Was that the only execution you heard
of? Oh, yes, yes. It wasn't a habit. I think it was dumped on me by Elwyn Jones, who was most likely responsible for prosecuting the bloke. Or his team.
What other things are you doing then? Because you're still DAA and DAAG, which is a change from your earlier role, particularly as you've moved out of city administration and you are now back in army administration.
Well, of course, we're already in 1945, the war was pretty well coming to an end. Italian fighting wasn't terribly serious, I don't think, as I recollect it. But I've got awfully little military recollection of my time in Florence, quite frankly.
Okay. So you got back, and then you had to go back out to Italy again. Was that something that you'd foreseen? Did you think?
Well, yes, I came home just before the VE Day, because I was back in this country when the war formally ended in Europe. But it was only a leave, so there was no question of my being posted back to the UK. I had been abroad then for 4.5 years, and my leave time had at last come up when home leave began to be possible.
How did you get back? Was it
At that stage, I came back. I came back by. I went all the way. I must have flown back to Naples or transit camp somewhere, and I think I came back by boat. I'm really not sure. I know how I finally came back after I'd had my leave, got married, gone out again. I know how I finally came back, and I came back on a prison train.
And who was on the prison train?
British soldiers that misbehaved, and they had a train, I got a lift on it, because in the same headquarters, when I came back after leave and so on, I had moved out of the Fifth Army area thing, and I'm not even sure of that now. After all these years, I think I was with AFHQ headquarters that had moved up somewhere there. And the transport officer involved, a colleague of mine at that time, he was half colonel by then, I was still a major, was a man called Dennis Healy. And I know he signed the movement order that got me onto a prison train.
Did you have to take any responsibility for the prisoners?
No. I was a passenger.
You were just hitching a lift.
I was hitching a lift.
What was this prison train like then? How are arrangements made to transport these people securely?
I think it might have been an Italian, well, it would be an Italian one, I suppose. It was organised into sort of cells with bars and things.
Oh.
As I remember, it's a bit vague, you can't, I wouldn't like to swear to all this. But I know it was a couple of days' journey across France and what have you. War was over and things were sorted out. And I mean, I'd been back 6 months after that before I finally came home, I think.
And what sort of things had these soldiers done that were on the prison train?
No idea. No idea. It was just the only point about my telling you this is it was a little novel and it was the way I do remember coming home. For the final time.
What have you been doing then at Allied Forces Headquarters? What were your
Generally being useful, as most of us were, while things were being run down. After all, I was in no, because of my length of service and one thing and another, and that I'd been in the war from the very beginning, I was in no danger of being drafted to the Far East. And like all at that stage, headquarters were just being run down, but you don't just close. You don't just close up.
No.
When you've got an organisation that size,
it has to be phased.
Bit by bit, it has to be phased out. Troops have to be moved. Locations change. 101 things. It's more complicated in some ways, I think, to close down a big war scenario than it is to fight a battle. So that was it.
Do you remember hearing about the atomic bomb attack on Japan? I remember where you were, what you were doing when...
No, I don't. I don't.
Because that happened before you came back from Italy, didn't
Yes. Mm. I do remember the impact of the death of Roosevelt. That somehow sticks in my memory.
Yes.
And how upset I and everybody else was. Mm. I really was mortified, you know, and it felt so much about this extraordinary man and with his incapacity, with his problems, that it came as a very sudden shock to everybody. And I think I made a note of it in one of my letters, where that I was, you know, really genuinely sorry and upset when this sudden rock had disappeared.
It's unexpected.
Well, look, he died. He died quickly. He wasn't ill.
Yeah.
It was heart. He died of, I think, heart attack, didn't he? Not sure. But I know it was a very sudden and immediate announcement, and that was it. But there you are.
You got back on your prison train, so it took a couple of days to get it
something like that.
Across, yes. And then you were at York Area Headquarters. What were you doing anything there?
Filling in time until I was thrown out or until I was demobbed. Mm. They had to do something with me because I was on the payroll.
On the strength.
On the strength of the army still, and they sent me to York. I was living back in Leeds, setting up house sort of thing, and I went to York to fill in time. I lived in York Monday to Friday and came home Saturday and Sunday and went back again. And I was employed in clearing up papers, documents, all sorts of things. And I have a recollection. Because it is sitting in my mind, I don't think I've invented it, but I give you that caveat. I was throwing out security documents in York, produced presumably by intelligence in the York area, one way back. And I came across one with my name on it.
As a communist.
That's right. I'm bloody sure I didn't invent this, but it sticks in my mind somewhere. It had them all in it, I might say, because I was never that sort of, I wasn't a revolutionary, but I was obviously known to somebody.
Known as a member of the party.
Which is interesting.
Had anyone...
But that's a purely anecdotal piece of information.
Had anyone ever asked you about,
no,
you know, your having been a communist?
No, never, never. No. It was the sort of thing that must have been held in some intelligence file, literally for somebody who they collect a list of names of people. It wasn't a sheaf of papers that thick, I can promise you.